Good day, everyone, and welcome. This is Ray Ford with FDA Center for Drug Evaluation and Research Small Business and Industry Assistance Program, also known as CDER-SBIA. Thank you for joining us today for our presentation on Optimizing Your Study Data Submissions to FDA, Study Data Technical Conformance Guide, October 2017 Version Update. This presentation will provide an overview of recent updates made to FDA's Study Data Technical Conformance Guide, also known as TCG. The TCG supplements the guidance for industry providing regulatory submissions in electronic format, standardized study data, and provides technical recommendations to sponsors for the submission of animal and human study data and related information in a standardized electronic format and INDs, NDAs, ANDAs, and BLAs. Our speakers and panelists include Ron Fitzmartin, Ph.D., Senior Advisor, Data Standards, Office of Strategic Programs, CDER; Jenny Hussong, Program Manager, Data Standards, Office of the Director, CBER; Sarah Jimenez, Ph.D., Staff Fellow, Office of Biostatistics, CDER; and Elaine Thompson, Ph.D., Senior Staff Fellow, Office of Computational Science, CDER. And now it's my pleasure to introduce Dr. Ron Fitzmartin.
Welcome, everyone. It's good to be here. This is the first in a series on the Technical Conformance Guide. This is a joint collaboration with CDER and CBER. And so we're hoping that as we go forward, that we will have a number of these webinars focused on the updates, the version updates, in March and October of each calendar year. Just quickly, what we'd like to do now is just go through what the TCG is. I know many of you know what the Technical Conformance Guide is about. It's been around for almost 4 years now. But just for the new people to the webinar and to the TCG, it provides recommendations on how to submit standardized study data. It supplements the guidance, the binding guidance on standardized study data. It is non-binding. However, adherence to this guide, as adherence to any of the FDA guidances, really facilitates regulatory review of medical products. The TCG is used for study data submissions to CDER and CBER only. So this is a joint document collaboration between CDER and CBER. When we produce these updates to the TCG, at least twice a year, there's an interdisciplinary team of medical reviewers, statistical reviewers, data standards personnel, and technical staff that meet on a regular basis to update the TCG. And as I said earlier, the TCG is updated at least twice a year in March and October, and sometimes more frequently, depending upon how critical the information is to get to sponsors. Now I want to turn it over to Jenny Hussong, and she's going to follow up with some additional information on the TCG. Jenny?
Thanks, Ron. Hi, everybody. This is Jenny Hussong from CBER. If we could go to the next slide. Oh, sorry. So, as Ron was saying, this is the first in what we hope will be a series of webinars on this technical conformance guide. And what this we hope that this will do is it will enhance our outreach activities to you. We would like to provide you with regular updates and clarification on the study data standards. We know it's a lot of information and it can be confusing. So we thought we would add these webinars to help answer your questions directly. So it provides us with your feedback through the Q&A session. It also informs us on TCG updates as well as topics for future webinars. One thing, when we get your questions that come into the eData mailbox, and there's also another mailbox that CBER has for data questions, we work together to answer these questions. This information will be available at the end of the webinar. So we hope to get your questions, and while we can't always answer every single one of them, and sometimes there may not be an answer, getting that feedback from you is very helpful because it helps us think about what we need to address in the technical conformance guide and what we may need to address in a future webinar. So that's all I have for now, and I will now turn it over to Sarah.
Hello, thanks for attending today's webinar. I'm Sarah Jimenez from the Office of Biostatistics at CDER. Today I will discuss clinical outcome assessments and the QS domain. I will discuss a legislative background, clinical outcome assessment, or COA introduction, logically skipped items, the importance of data from logically skipped items, and a conclusion. The first topic to discuss is the legislative background. The Prescription Drug User Fee Act, or PDUFA 6, was signed on August 18, 2017, and took effect on October 1, 2017. A key part of PDUFA 6 is the enhancement of the incorporation of the patient's voice in drug development and decision-making. Another key part of PDUFA 6 is the enhancement of analysis data standards for product development and review in the Human Drug Review Program. Next, the 21st Century Cures Act was signed on December 13, 2016. Title III of the Act, Subtitle A, is entitled Patient-Focused Drug Development. It includes the requirements that the FDA, after approving an application for a new medication, publish a brief statement on any patient experience data or related information that was part of the application. Also included is the requirement that the FDA report on its use of patient experience data in regulatory decision making. The next topic is a COA introduction. Patient experience data have become more important in the drug development process. Patient experience data can be captured in a COA, or clinical outcome assessment. A COA is an assessment of a clinical outcome that describes or reflects how an individual feels, functions, or survives. This assessment can be made through report by a clinician, a patient, a non-clinical observer, or through a performance-based assessment. There are four types of COAs: patient-reported outcome, clinician-reported outcome, observer-reported outcome, and performance outcome. This talk focuses on PROs, or patient-reported outcomes. Note, however, that the ideas in this talk apply to any of these COAs. A PRO is a measurement based on a report that comes directly from the patient about the status of the patient's health condition without amendment or interpretation of the patient's response by a clinician or anyone else. Symptoms or other unobservable concepts known only to the patient can only be measured by PRO measures. PRO measures can also assess the patient perspective on functioning or activities that may also be observable by others. The outcome can be measured in absolute terms, such as the severity of a symptom, sign, or state of a disease, or as a change from a previous measure. PRO measures include rating scales and counts of events. In clinical trials, a PRO instrument can be used to measure the effect of a medical intervention on one or more concepts, such as a symptom or group of symptoms, effects on a particular function or group of functions, or a group of symptoms or functions shown to measure the severity of a health condition. PROs are a key part of patient-focused drug development, also called PFDD. An increasing number of drug submissions have used PROs for efficacy in their primary and secondary endpoints. Examples of PRO instruments are the Patient Global Impression of Severity and the short form 36. Now, on to logically skipped items. A PRO instrument may have logically skipped items. This occurs when an instrument item is asked conditionally based on the response for a previous item in the instrument. One PRO instrument that has logically skipped items is the Work Productivity and Activity Impairment Questionnaire, General Health Version 2.0. Questions 1 and 2 of the instrument are shown here. Question 1 says, are you currently employed working for pay? The responses are no or yes. If the response is no, questions 2 through 5 are considered logically skipped, and question 6 is asked next. Questions 4 and 5 are shown here. Question 4 also has skipped item logic. Question 4 says, during the past 7 days, how many hours did you actually work? If the response is 0, question 5 is considered logically skipped, and question 6 is asked next. Question 6, the last item of the instrument, is shown here. Another PRO instrument that has logically skipped items is the patient-reported outcomes version of the common terminology criteria for adverse events, also called the PRO-CTCAE. Per the scoring instructions on the National Cancer Institute's website, the PRO-CTCAE has been developed and tested with a conditional branching logic that helps to reduce respondent burden. Conditional branching should be employed for electronic administration of PRO-CTCAE symptom terms that have two or more items. This logic branches from frequency, then to severity, then to interference. For example, if frequency is greater than never, you next pose the severity question. And if severity is greater than none, you pose the interference question. Item 17 shown here has two questions with skipped item logic. The first question asks, in the last 7 days, how often did you have pain in the abdomen, belly area? If the response is never, the next two questions are logically skipped. If the response is not never, the second question is then asked. The second question asks, in the last 7 days, what was the severity of your pain in the abdomen, belly area at its worst? If the response is none, the third question is logically skipped. If the response is not none, the third question is then asked. The third question in item 17 asks, in the last 7 days, how much did pain in the abdomen, belly area, interfere with your usual or daily activities? Item 17 should have three records per subject and time point in QS, and they should denote if any items were logically skipped, according to the standards in the updated TCG, which will be discussed shortly. It's important to program QS based on the instrument's documented scoring instructions. Those instructions may not be explicitly stated on a CRF. These examples showed two cases, one with clear instructions on the CRF and one without clear instructions on the CRF. Those instructions were obtained from the instrument's documentation and should be followed. Data from questionnaires are included in the QS Questionnaires SCTM dataset. Per the CDISC SCTM Implementation Guide version 3.2, the QS dataset is in the Findings dataset class. Data from logically skipped instrument items have been inconsistently included in regulatory submissions or not included at all. There has been a need to create data standards for logically skipped items in PRO instruments. This data standard was defined in the updated October 2017 TCG version 4.0. Section 4.1.1.3, SCTM domain specifications, in the updated TCG says that data from logically skipped items are to be included in QS as follows. Some items in an instrument may be logically skipped per the instrument's instructions. Responses for logically skipped items should be 1. Recorded and or scored according to the instructions provided in the instrument's user manual, scoring manual, or other documentation provided by the instrument developer, and 2. Included in the submission dataset. There are two cases. Case number 1. If instructions on how to record and or score responses to logically skipped items are available from the instrument developer, then records for logically skipped items should be included in the submission dataset with the following. QS stat equals not done, QS res ND equals logically skipped item, and QS ORES, QS stress C, and QS stress N would be assigned according to the instrument's instructions. Case number 2. If instructions on how to record and or score responses to logically skipped items are not available from the instrument developer, then records for logically skipped items should be included in the submission dataset with the following. QS stat equals not done, QS res ND equals logically skipped item, QS ORES, QS stress C, and QS stress N all set to null. Records from logically skipped instrument items are to be included in SCTM QS to allow for traceability to the source data, such as CRF data or eDiary data. Data capture mechanisms may need to be modified to allow for the collection of records for logically skipped items. We strongly recommend that records from logically skipped items in ADAM data sets are carried forward from corresponding records in QS. That is, the records should not be created in ADAM and should be obtained from the original data points in QS. I wanted to mention this from the TCG section 8.3.1. It says, an important component of a regulatory review is an understanding of the provenance of the data, or traceability of the sponsor's results back to the CRF data. If a reviewer is unable to trace study data from the data collection of subjects participating in a study to the analysis of the overall study data, then the regulatory review of a submission may be compromised. This is one reason why the logically skipped item records are needed in QS. Next, I'll discuss the importance of data from logically skipped items. Per 21 CFR 314.126, an instrument must be well-defined and reliable. It says, an adequate and well-controlled study has the following characteristics. the methods of assessment of subjects' response are well-defined and reliable. This includes being able to distinguish between missing values and logically skipped items in an instrument, since a missing value for an item in an instrument is different from the item being logically skipped. If that distinction cannot be made, the submitted data are not accurate, and a sponsor is not in compliance with what the FDA requires. Thus, it's critical for a sponsor to be able to distinguish between logically skipped items in an instrument and items with truly missing values. Those records should be distinguishable in the submitted QS data set for the data standards defined in TCG section 4.1.1.3, as well as in corresponding ADAM data sets. I will now describe some reasons why these data are important. One reason is that there are numerous methods for handling missing endpoint data in a clinical trial. Those missing data methods can directly impact a clinical trial's efficacy endpoint results, as well as sensitivity analysis results. Distinguishing between missing values and logically skipped items in an instrument is especially important as an increasing number of clinical trials are using PROs to demonstrate efficacy. Another reason is that issues can arise if data collected from an instrument have many missing values. Sometimes patients fail to report for visits, fail to complete questionnaires, or withdraw from a clinical trial before its planned completion. Those missing data can introduce bias and interfere with the ability to compare effects in the test group with the control group, since only a subset of the initial randomized population contributes. The patient groups may no longer be comparable in this case. If this occurs, it is important to know whether data were indeed missing and did not originate from logically skipped records. Finally, item-level analyses are conducted during PRO instrument development. During instrument development, it's necessary to know whether items have truly missing values or are logically skipped. This distinction between items that have truly missing values or are logically skipped can impact the final items included in an instrument. In conclusion, PROs have become a key part of patient-focused drug development. This talk focuses on PROs, but all four types of COAs are a key part of patient-focused drug development. An increasing number of drug submissions have used PROs for efficacy in their primary and secondary endpoints. Recently passed legislation, as well as FDA regulations, call for patient experience data that are well-defined and reliable. Those well-defined and reliable data should be included in submissions to the FDA and should include traceability to the source questionnaire data. The FDA will expect inclusion of records from logically skipped instrument items as a data standard. Thank you for attending today. I'd also like to thank my colleagues in the Office of Biostatistics for their contributions to this talk. My references will be included in the last slide. I'll turn this over to Elaine Thompson next. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Elaine Thompson from the Office of Computational Sciences. I'm going to talk to you about updates to the technical conformance guide about implementation of the SEN standard, the standard for exchange of non-clinical data. What I'm going to cover in the talk are the major TCG updates to the SEN content. I've made some updates to the study type section, the SEN domain specifications, including MICL and PC, updates to information about when to use custom domains, some information about tumor data sets, and updates to the sections on legacy data. My slides are going to have the general format of a quote from the technical conformance guide at the top of the slide, and then some bullet points at the bottom from which I'll be speaking. So when you download these later, you'll have the actual TCG language. The first update I want to talk about is in section 4.1.3.1. It's the study type section. So we added SEND 3.1 to the data standards catalog in August 2017 with a Federal Register notice. And when that Federal Register notice also included sunset dates for SEND 3.0. The SEND IG 3.1 includes respiratory and cardiovascular safety pharmacology studies as study types. So when SEND 3.1 is required, it's also required to include those study types in non-clinical data submissions. There are some SEND 3.1 specific updates to the definition section as well. In SEND 3.1, the variable nominal DUI replaces visit DUI to capture days on which information was collected that are intended to be grouped. So anywhere in SEND 3.0, you should continue to use visit DUI to indicate grouping. When you shift over to SEND 3.1, instead of visit DUI, the correct variable is nom DUI. And there are a number of mentions throughout the SEND part of the technical conformance guide about visit DUI and nom DUI, so just apply them appropriately depending on whether you're using SEND 3.0 or SEND 3.1. When we did a data standards pilot on the histopathology domain, the MI domain, we found some issues that organizations were having mapping data that was collected on different scales into the CDISC controlled terminology. CDISC only provides a 5-level severity scale of slight, mild, moderate, marked, and severe, and it very explicitly states that the severity should be on a 5-level scale. I'm going to show you on the next slide an example of what happened when an organization had a little bit of trouble mapping. And so this language in the TCG is designed to provide an alternative. So if you collected your data on a 3-point, 4-point, or 6-point scale, and you just can't map into the CDISC controlled terminology without a loss of information, you can follow this part of the technical conformance guide and use this 1-of-4, 2-of-4 style mapping. This is an example of what it would look like. So the first two tables, the upper two tables, are where we saw a problem in the pilot. So an organization submitted data that was mapped to, collected as minimal, slight, or mild. And when they mapped it into SEND, the SEND data set contained minimal, mild, and moderate. So for FDA review, mild and moderate are not considered to be comparable terms. So if that happens and your non-clinical data set collection system just can't support mapping to a 5-point scale, instead you can use this technical conformance guide alternative. And you could present these data as 1-of-6, 2-of-6, or 3-of-6. Where you provide a number and the scale. Now, this is going to produce validator errors, and it's going to be an extension of a non-extensible controlled terminology list. If FDA understands that, it's okay. The reviewers would strongly prefer to have scientifically accurate data. So go ahead and extend the non-extensible code list and explain what you've done in the NSDRG if you opt to use this way of mapping in histopathology. The next domain that has some updates is clinical observations. The language has been updated to explain that what we want to do with the data are to make incidence tables. And then reviewers might make graphs from the incidence tables to look at how frequently certain findings are found in the different dose groups. So the language is designed to talk about differences in terms that you need to explain and differences that you don't need to explain. So we've noticed that in many non-clinical data collection systems, there might be longer phrases or slightly different terminology in the study report. If your study report, if your data collection system says convulsions observed post-dose, and that comes out in the study report as seizures, no explanation is needed. A scientific reviewer has no problem making the connection between those two terms. However, if they make an incidence table and there's 12 animals with seizures listed in the study report and there's 15 when they make the incidence table and send, that needs to be explained in the non-clinical study data reviewer's guide because it's a lack of traceability. In the plasma concentrations domain, FDA understands that providing the exact plasma collection times in PC date and time of collection can be burdensome. And some CROs are using different computer systems, collecting records on paper. And so if you're submitting a GLP toxicology study, the single dose, repeat dose, or carcinogenicity, and it's just not feasible to provide PC date and time of collection, you may either populate the column with only the collection date. You can populate it with the collection date and the protocol time. So, for example, if the protocol says it's a 15-minute collection, you can populate it with 15 minutes after the dose time. Or the column can be left null. This means that PCDY is technically an imputation because PCDY is supposed to be date and time of collection minus exposure. PCDY may be imputed in this case. It should still be populated. SEND doesn't explicitly support custom domains in SEND 3.0. However, sometimes there are times when you need to provide data to FDA, and it's a little bit outside the scope of SEND. So the first place to look is the CDISC document called the Codex, and that describes which data CDISC has determined can be confidently exchanged in SEND. And if it's in the Codex, you should be able to do it in a normal SEND domain. Sometimes it's necessary to provide extra data, particularly in efficacy studies that might be submitted in an animal rule submission, for example. And if that's the case, then first look for a draft SEND domain. If a draft SEND domain isn't available, you could cobble together a domain from an SDTM domain, and it will be a custom domain because you've added SEND-appropriate variables, but it still follows the SDTM. And if you're going to make a domain completely from scratch, ideally you would approach the review division ahead of time, talk to them about what you're going to do, and then make use of the study data standardization plan to work with the review division and get that data into an SDTM style format that the review division can use. When you're submitting a carcinogenicity data set, FDA still requires a tumor.xpt file and its associated define.xml and define.pdf. When you're putting together a carcinogenicity submission with a study with a start date that there is also SEND required, make certain that there aren't any discrepancies between the numbers and incidence rates of tumors in your SEND data set, in your study report, and in the tumor.xpt data set, because reviewers have no way of interpreting and knowing which number is correct in which piece of your FDA submission, so they can't perform the carcinogenicity assessment. So make sure that everything is consistent, or if there are inconsistencies, put them in the NSDRG in the section that talks about differences between the SEND data sets and the study report. and the statistical reviewers know to look for them there. Finally, the legacy data section has been further updated. When you submit a GLP non-clinical study, the PDF study report contains all of the collected data in the individual animal listings. That is a complete submission. All the data elements are there. So when you're submitting SEN data alongside that, and you have a data element that can't be provided electronically in SEN, explain it in the NSDRG, the Non-Clinical Study Data Reviewer's Guide. And if you don't submit non-standardized study data, unless your review division has come to you and said, hey, we need this specific thing, fall back on your PDF study report and your individual animal listings. FDA understands that companies are still working on their non-clinical systems. A lot of our SEN submissions right now are voluntary, so the study doesn't strictly require it. So in the context of a voluntary SEN submission, you have a lot of leeway to make sure that things are working and explain things in the non-clinical study data reviewer's guide. But don't send in non-standardized data unless it's requested. We also do not expect submission of a legacy data conversion plan for non-clinical studies. We understand that you're mapping out of established data collection systems, and as long as the data are coming out in usable SEND, then that's not a legacy data conversion from the FDA perspective, so please don't send us legacy data conversion plans. Again, in the specific context of an animal rule study, when you're establishing your study data standardization plan, you might have old data that you're converting to SEND, and in that case, talk to the review division and determine whether they need you to provide them any additional information about a data conversion. So the summary of the non-clinical TCG updates, we've updated it for SEND 3.1. We provided additional implementation details for histopathology, ClinObs, and PC domain. If you need to submit data that's outside of the confirmed data exchange endpoints for SEND, discuss it pre-submission and document what you're doing in the study data standardization plan. Make sure that everything that you're submitting in your carcinogenicity assessment studies is internally consistent and explain it in the NSDRG if it's not. And finally, no non-standardized electronic data or legacy data conversion plan should be included with non-clinical tox studies in SEND unless they're requested by a review division. Thank you very much, and I appreciate your attention. This next slide has a series of references that are clickable. There are links to all of the FDA data standards resources. We're going to be taking a very short break right now while we review the questions you've been submitting while we speak, and we'll be back.
Greetings, participants. The questions that have been submitted are a bit lengthier than we're used to, so we're taking a bit of time to make sure we parse them properly. We'll be getting started again.
Hi everyone, welcome back. We're going to start the question and answer part of the webinar. So the first question I have is, how do folks that don't have SAS create a TS.xpt file? And the non-clinical Fuse working group has released a script in GitHub that uses the free R scientific software, and it will create a trialsummary.xpt. So you can get that through the Fuse GitHub. Will there be a discussion as to if how standardized study test submission data can be submitted to CBER or CDER? There is information on submitting study data test submissions on the study data standards webpage. So you can go there for information on how to do a test submission. And that question was slightly reiterated in one of today's questions. I have spent a lot of time working towards access to the FDA e-submission gateway for an ANDA. It's my initial first attempt to set this up for the research institute where I work. So that study data test submission process was set up for you. Set up for people that are learning ECTD and learning how to get the FDA gateway to work. What is the correct interpretation of the date a requirement starts and ends on the data standards catalog? Is it the study start date or the submission date? From the binding guidance, it is the study start date. We have no background on this topic, so we're looking to learn when and what is required for IND submissions. So for a commercial IND submission, you need to put the data into the ECTD standard, the whole submission. And then if you have phase zero clinical trials, those would be an SDTM. And if it's all non-clinical trials, then non-clinical trials that are presented in module 4 in 4.2.3.1, 4.2.3.4, 2 or 4.2.3.4, those are single dose, repeat dose, and carcinogenicity studies, would need to be provided and sent if the study start date is after December 17, 2017. For non-clinical studies, when is submission of a study data standardization plan recommended or required? The study data standardization plan is recommended when you are submitting non-clinical studies for which the SEND standard is established, and you would list which non-clinical studies you are including your SEND data sets with. And should we do this as part of a pre-IND meeting? You are warmly welcome to talk about data standards implementation, and what you're going to include with the submission to document your data standards in your pre-IND meetings.
Hello, this is Sarah. I'll start with the first question, which is, when do patients submit PRO measures after the clinical trial? So it looks like maybe this has two parts. For a sponsor, the submission of these data is done during the NDA-BLA submission. For a patient, this is done during the course of a trial according to the PRO administration schedule. Another question that has appeared a number of times is regarding the SCTM implementation guide version 3.2, specifically section 4.1.5.1.2, test not done. We are very aware of this section in the implementation guide. We updated our TCG for the logically skipped items based on reasons discussed in today's presentation. We have a wide consensus to include these logically skipped item records within the FDA as well as with other organizations. And so this is why we included the update in this updated TCG. This is a data standard that we want going forward. It's our understanding as well that section 4.1.5.1.2 was not intended for logically skipped instrument items. Another question is, how can we differentiate logically skipped data when compared to actual missing values from the collection in SCTM QS? This should be determined by using the instrument's documentation and the questions that are denoted as being possibly logically skipped. This is something that a sponsor has to determine based on the data collection methods in a study as well as the instrument's documentation.
And we're going to continue reviewing questions here and parsing them out. We'll be back with additional questions and the answers to them in just a moment.
This is Elaine with a couple more answers. Why was the reference to the metadata submission guidelines removed? The metadata submission guidelines is not part of a CDISC implementation guide, and CBER and CDER have not done a formal review of that document. I completed the ESG test 3 days ago and have heard nothing back from ESG, even with follow-up emails to the help desk. When will I receive the ESG production link, or is it okay to use it? Email the ESG help desk again, and we'll also look into it internally as well. But do keep sending emails to the help desk, because those are the right people. In a situation where a sponsor has non-clinical legacy reports but no electronic study data are available, would it be acceptable to submit the study reports without electronic data sets? If there is only a PDF file and there is no electronic data requirement, then it is acceptable to submit only the PDF file.
Greetings all. Dr. Jimenez is continuing to parse some of the lengthy questions she's got. We'll be back in about 1 or 2 more minutes for her to continue answering some of the questions that came in for
Hello, this is Sarah. One question is, if there are submissions that are ongoing that use questionnaires as a primary endpoint, how should sponsors handle these? There's a similar question where, in the case where the database does not output a record for skip questions, are you requesting that we impute records in the SCTMs for this? This will break traceability from the source, and generally SCTMs should not contain imputations. What we are recommending is that these records be post-populated and have those values shown in the updated, have those values shown in QoS according to the updated data standards that were just described today. Another question is, if a question isn't applicable, why do we need a record that ultimately just confirms we didn't need a record? Thank you. The reasons for this were indicated in today's presentation. So, for example, one reason pertained to study efficacy. One main point also is that ultimately missing and logically skipped records are different, and these records must be distinguishable from another. Thank you.
We are continuing to parse the questions. We'll be back in just a minute or two with some additional questions.
Hi, this is Elaine, back with another pile of questions. What kind of validation errors do we have while doing the mapping in histology severity? Any specific validation error? The differences that we saw between histology severities were if you compare an incidence table of histology severity made from SEND to the non-clinical study report. So a bad mapping would not produce any sort of data validation error. It just makes all of your mild severity histopathology look moderate in your SEND data set. So if the reviewer goes to the SEND data set, they think that your severities are moderate and they're more concerned. If you follow the new directions in the technical conformance guide, and you do your mapping on a four-point scale to be 1 of 4, 2 of 4, 3 of 4, you will receive validation errors. You will receive an error that you have extended a non-extensible controlled terminology list. And that's okay. Explain it in the NSDRG. Document what you did. The next question, is there a free software that the industry recommends we use to validate SEND and SDTM data? FDA does not endorse any products or software, sorry. You might want to talk to people around CDISC and Fuse. Next question. In place of extending the controlled terminology, we are currently an animal rule product and have a lot of study data for our studies in legacy format, which we have submitted to the agency in paper format. While getting ready for our phase 3 studies, there is a need to resubmit the old non-clinical study data in the SDTM format as per SDTM IG. And why going with the approach of extending the controlled terminology? When it comes to animal efficacy studies that are submitted in support of animal rule applications, please talk to your review division. They're going to be able to tell you whether they can work with paper, they can work with legacy, they want you to modify SDTM. That needs to happen in a conversation between you and your review division, and then whatever is decided, you'll document in your study data standardization plan. At alldefined.pdf. Has this become a standard document expected for submissions even for non-legacy studies? If so, are there any guidelines? So that has two answers. The biostatistics group has requested that you continue to provide a defined.pdf with the tumor.xpt file, the same as always. So tumor.xpt comes with a defined.xml and a defined.pdf. For all other clinical and non-clinical studies, the guideline is that if your defined.xml is printable, then you do not need to provide a second define.pdf. That is in the technical conformance guide. What is the relationship between technical conformance guide guidance and the CDISC implementation guide? We have been following the latter. Is there anything we need to do differently moving forward? The FDA technical conformance guide is a series of clarifications and non-binding recommendations that if you follow the technical conformance guide, your data are easier for the FDA to review, to use, to understand, and to load into our systems of record. So the technical conformance guide is our document to clarify the implementation guide and to help you follow the implementation guide in a way that FDA can really use the data effectively. There are occasional instances, and there's one that I spoke about today in the SEND updates with the histopathology severities, where our directions in the technical conformance guide actually do tell you to do something that's not in the CDISC implementation guide. That language was developed collaboratively with CDISC, and so that follows CDISC recommendations, and our hope is that actually that histopathology severity will eventually make it into SEND-IG 3.2. So in that case, we have departed from the CDISC implementation guide, but it was done very thoughtfully, very deliberately, and with the help of our colleagues at CDISC. Are any of the updates applicable to GLP studies? Well, pretty much all of the updates that apply to non-clinical studies apply to non-clinical studies under GLPs. For further clarification to Elaine's last response regarding only PDF data available, what happens if the reviewer comes back and requests the data in SEND format? The requirement dates for SEND formatted data are in the FDA data standards catalog. A reviewer is not going to come back and request a non-clinical repeat dose tox or single dose tox or carcinogenicity study that does not fall under the requirement in SEND. And once you are under the requirement date in the data standards catalog, the e-data is a binding guidance, so you must submit SEND data sets for non-clinical studies that start after the requirement date in the data standards catalog.
Hello, this is Sarah. One question is, what about non-COA or non-QS data? What are the expectations around logically skipped items, questions on a CRF? So the response to that question is, at this time, this update in the TCG only applies to instrument data in QS. The next question is, what happens if the trigger for a logically skipped question is missing? Should the logically skipped question be treated as missing data or logically skipped? What we could recommend is that in this situation, please see the user guide for instructions on how to handle this. Ideally, the instrument's user guide should have some explanation for what to do in this type of scenario. Additionally, assuming that a questionnaire is administered electronically through some type of device, there should be some types of checks in the programming to handle this type of situation. Thanks.
And we've got just a couple, one or two more questions we're reviewing right now. We'll be back in a minute or two to wrap up the Q&A session.
Hi, this is Elaine. I'm going to answer two more questions. The first question, you have had the TCG and CDISC standards as requirements. Do you have a recommended validation criteria like ECTD for validating the submission e-data? And we don't currently have severities in our validation criteria. The data need to be in standardized format. And they need to be reviewable. So we talk extensively about traceability in the technical conformance guide, and if that traceability isn't present from the electronic data through to the case report form, or in non-clinical, if there are huge discrepancies, like, for example, a tumor.xpt that has different numbers of tumors than the SEND data set, then those would not be reviewable. The second question is, we know the FDA have accepted SAS transport. What are other accepted data formats in FDA now, such as open source data format, R data set, or other types of data? Any recommendation or comments? And on the ECTD webpage, there is a document that contains the specification for file format types. So you can refer to that document to find out information about other file formats. So I'm going to turn this over to Ray Ford to close out our webinar.
That now brings us to the end of this very informative webinar. On behalf of CDER Small Business and Industry Assistance, we hope that you enjoyed today's presentation and found it helpful. We look forward to your presence at future webinars, which will be advertised on our website at fda.gov/CDER SBIA webinars.